The Anton Savage Show Sunday.
Brought to you by PwC. Combining talent and technology, we're hardwired to find solutions.
On News Talk.
Now, I am joined by Francis Fitzgerald, former Taoiseach, former Minister for Justice and Minister for Children, which is relevant in relation to referendums because it was in those two roles that you ran two of them. Gary Murphy, Professor of Politics at DCU, and Anna-Marie McHugh, Assistant Managing Director of the National Ploughing Association. Gary Murphy has a piece in today's Sunday Independent that said, lads, if you knew the history of referendums, you would have known this was a likely outcome.
Sunday Times, Anton. Oh. They'll kill me if you...
I apologise to the Times, I apologise to Gary, I apologise to the Indo. Sunday Times is where Gary Murphy's writing.
I think it's a very bad look for the Taoiseach. I think there is a sense, and you mentioned it in your interview with Padraig Tobin, that these were very much the Taoiseach's referendums, notwithstanding that Roger O'Gorman was upfront, but maybe not upfront enough in the campaign. Heather Humphreys was the Fine Gael Director of Elections, but I'm not sure she even did an interview. Thomas Byrne didn't do very well for Fianna Fáil. Let's call a spade a spade. If you lose a referendum by 75%, which the one on Care was lost by, I mean, this is, that can't be interpreted in any way, but a bit of a disaster for the government. Now, I wrote last week, there's no correlation between election results and bad referendums or good referendums.
Which oddly Leo Varadkar is pointing out in one interview where he is saying they had three successful referendums and then took a pasting at the subsequent general.
I mean, if you look at the same-sex marriage referendum, which Francis was involved in, that was May of 2015, following February 2016, government parties, Fine Gael and Labour, got a tanking, no benefit for repeal, the 8th from 2018 to 2020. But losing referendums by its very nature is bad. And I don't think there's any sugarcoating that for the Taoiseach. And to be fair to him, he came out and he owned it to an extent yesterday, which is to his credit. But it's not a good look.
Well, to use the sort of the rugby comparison, there is losing a referendum a la the Irish rugby team yesterday, where it was snatched in the final minutes and you say, what a valiant effort. And there is a record-breaking defeat, the like of which we have never seen in the state's history. Surely that has political implications, Francis.
Well, it certainly has a lot of implications, no question of it. I mean, I think the intent was good, but quite clearly the wording was not good enough and led to too many complications which were not understood. I do think the government will be relieved to hear what Gary has to say about the impact of referendums today. But nevertheless, it does call for a very big rethink. These were big issues. These were issues that people actually care about.
Well, now, hang on, explain this to me, because one of the texts that we got related earlier on to the National Women's Council and their role in this. And they said that the National Women's Council effectively were out of touch with the people that they represent and that they represent the middle and upper classes. To quote it exactly, they do not represent me. They represent rich, middle, upper class women who have continually let women down. I would love to know if the members took a pay cut for their participation in the referendum. That's something of a red herring. You were chair of the National Women's Council.
National Women's Council has done superb
work. You were
work.
Brought in the first wave of feminism by Garrett into FG. At no point were these referendums offered up to the people during that. If it was such a pressing issue, why not then?
It was very hard to get it on the political agenda at that time. Almost impossible. So many, many people have called for a long time to make sure that care was recognised, given the absolute implications. I was looking at the figures this morning, not to divert, but unpaid work every day, 25 billion hours of unpaid work every day, mostly by women, worth $11 trillion to the world economy. This is a huge issue. You know, the way the wording was, clearly it didn't capture enough the whole issue of care and its complexities, particularly in relation to disability. So there is a lot of rethinking, not just for the political parties, but equally for the NGOs, who they will all have to sit back, analyse the whole issue. I personally think there were too many issues that got caught up in the two referendums that were too big, too complex to put into the wording that was proposed. And that's, I mean, this is what the research in the Sunday Independent, the reason cited for the no in both of them, lack of clarity information, contentment with current laws, concerns about the legal and social. There were so many questions at the end of the day. I mean, the intention was good, as I say, definitely. It was to deal with an article in the Constitution that people for decades felt was very limiting in relation to women. But then the way it turned out, it looked like you were taking mothers out of the Constitution. Clearly, we need to put mothers and fathers and carers in.
Hang on, I just want to be clear on this. If you're doing an assessment saying this is why it did not work from a government perspective, you are saying the campaign was okay,
No, the it intent, wasn't.
It wasn't. So no, it's both no. wording and campaign.
Yes, I think that I do agree with people that overall, clearly, I mean, Anton, if it was a successful campaign, you wouldn't have had the results that we're seeing today. I mean, clearly, I mean, I think certain personalities, you know, ran away with it to a degree. And there were too many different spokespeople coming from government trying to counteract the arguments. And the public decided. And this is the great thing about democracy.
Now, when you say certain person, does that mean Michael McDowell went and
won it? Michael was one of them. And there were a number of others. I mean, I feel myself that those arguments got into the frame early on, very quickly, and were never really dealt with enough. There were too many questions about the wording.
Anna Marie,
right,
I see you nodding enthusiastically to that.
Michael McDowell and also Maria Steen. They impacted
and I should say Michael McDowell will be with us after.
Yeah, they impact us. But you know what? I think, Anton, clap on the back for the Irish public. A very proud day for the Irish public. I think it's after it will make this thing about will it affect the next election? Will it affect Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, whatever? That's not what yesterday's statement was about. It was about the people of Ireland standing up to the political system and saying, hold on here, we're not going to be, you know, whitewashed on this. We're not happy with the information. We're not happy with the way you've put it to us. So we're saying no. And I think that was a really, really strong message from yesterday.
We had learned in previous referenda, you see, that you have to have answers to all the questions before you put a referendum to the people. You publish the legislation beforehand. You have answers to all those questions. For some reason, that did not happen enough in this campaign. I think that was very, very
key. But Gary
Murphy,
does that go to Pádraig Tobin's point about there being a sort of a self-contained bubble where everybody says we're grand? Mm.
I think so. And I think that's a pretty damning indictment from a very senior person in Fine Gael of the government and of the Taoiseach who leads it, whose ultimate responsibility is to explain to the people. And again, I write today, putting referendums to the
in
people...
In the Sunday Times, we should point out.
Putting referendums to the people where there's no clarity or where there is scope for confusion. Now, we've had referendums in the past where there was all sorts of mad things. You remember, like, Nisa and people like us would be conscripted and when we were much younger, which was complete nonsense. But in this particular case, the government got itself in a muddle from the off with, like, what was a durable relationship and what wasn't a durable relationship. So that's a black mark, clearly. And then not to have all the disability care groups on side in the first instance. I mean, this is politics 101. It was if you have such significant groups who will have a lot of airtime because of the requirement for balance, which I agree with, of course, then you run the risk of what happened yesterday. No, I'm shocked. No, I'll put it, and I've been looking at referendums for a long time, at just the sheer scale of the defeat across, as you mentioned earlier, across all classes, across both genders, across age. You know, I polled my students anonymously. In other words, I wasn't asking them their names, but I said, you know, what's the view on the referendums? And there were two men and a woman saying, not sure about this really. So from a few days earlier, I thought care would certainly be lost, but I really am shocked by the scale of the family defeat, which I thought actually would be passed narrowly, but clearly not.
But I don't believe, I don't know whether you do or not, Gary, I don't believe that the results are about people saying we don't want an inclusive society.
Oh, not we at don't, all. No,
right, that's completely. Not what it's no. about. So, I mean, people who are saying and kind of appropriating it is as a result that says, oh, we're being too progressive as a country and we're too woke and this is gender politics. That's not what this is about, actually, because Irish people have shown they want an inclusive society. They've shown they want to, mm-hmm. you know, make sure that people with a disability care and those who are being cared for are dealt with, you know, appropriately and the services are developed. It's not about that. It's much more, I think, about the wording and the I don't think the Irish people were confused. I think that they decided that there were too many implications to both referendum to say yes at this point in time. And it does mean there has to be a lot of reflection in the political parties. No doubt about it. And in fairness, as you say, the Taoiseach came out and accepted that completely. That's the great thing about a democracy. There'd be other countries where this result wouldn't be accepted and there'd be a fight against it. So let's not throw everything out. You know, it's a good democracy.
That voice is Frances Fitzgerald, who is Fine Gael MEP for Dublin. I'm joined as well by Gary Murphy, Professor of Politics at DCU, and Anna Marie McHugh, Assistant Managing Director of the National Ploughing Association. Texts continue to come in. I voted no because after the government published the proposed amendments, they couldn't answer basic questions about the wording. Either they were too stupid to anticipate the questions or they thought we were too stupid to ask them.
And you had ministers giving contradictory views, which is like, and the government needs to speak with one voice. And when you have different parts of the coalition saying different things about what these referendums might mean, I mean, that's a very bad look. And it is no surprise that people will not be persuaded. I've said this for like over a decade. Changing the constitution is a big deal, and it's an important act of civic duty. And Anna Marie is right in relation to the importance of the Irish people casting their ballot. But if the government can't explain why the constitution should be changed, then it gets the result it deserves.
And isn't it a good thing that we've seen it, you know, that we know now that the people of Ireland seen it important enough to not let the constitution be changed without a lot more clarity and the government being a lot more definitive about what we
were
voting
for. Another thing that was surprising to many was not that there was a huge turnout, but I think everybody had sort of, or a lot of people had decided, sure, there'll be three people and their dog will show up for this. Yeah. It was significant.
It was absolutely.
But we talk about significant. It's 45%, which means 55% of people aren't voting. Now, the electoral register itself is still a bit of a mess. I mean, there are people on it who,
but
frankly,
Children's was what, 34? Thereabouts?
Yeah, 39, I think, like, a bit higher, but like less than 40. Now, the register is a mess. There are people on it who are dead. There are people on it who have three or four votes. You might have a vote in Cork and Limerick and where you live now. And it's a big job for the electoral commission. But like, I'm sceptical of this idea that 45% we should be celebrating it. Why isn't it much higher? Why isn't it we've lost 20% from the repeal of the 8th and same-sex marriage referendum? No, day and two's the electorate. There's no home to vote hashtag for Friday's referendums, Anton. But I think the body politic needs to have a look at itself if we're congratulating ourselves that 45% of people vote.
That's true. I mean, but do remember, a third of referendums are lost as well. You know, that is the reality of referendums, right?
Well, governments have to learn from their history.
Yes, absolutely.
Interesting text on that note saying, the government wants heads to roll in RTE over the waste of 2.2 million on an RTE musical. Whose heads are going to roll over the decision to waste 20 plus million on referendums that nobody wanted?
Yeah, and I was just asking the two experts in this sector before we came in relation to, you know, with the general elections coming up, could we have tied this in? And apparently we could, but it would have meant in some areas up to six ballots on the day. I don't know. I still think, you know, there's so many sectors in Ireland that badly need funding. That should have been considered more seriously.
And there's an interesting point about these referendums compared to, say, marriage equality or even the children's, is that you had no individual stories about impact. And you know the way they say nothing speaks to an issue like an individual story. I mean, we had such powerful stories during both of those other referendums. It never captured the kind of individual story kind of profile in this sort of way.
That's one of the things that's coming in a lot in text is Tom Clonan's discussion of his son's experience.
Well, that
seems to have struck
that
a resonance on the no side rather than the yes.
Well, on Tom care, did to make a difference.
There is a case to be made that the government could legislate on care tomorrow or all next week, and it could input significant extra monies to the caring sector without any need for a referendum. And it wasn't also, and Tom Clonan eloquently expresses, it wasn't able to answer that question, that we don't really need a referendum to be blunt about it, spend much more on caring. And I think that if you can't answer those questions, yeah, you're in trouble.
Now, I want you to put on your professorial hat in respect of your professor of politics at DCU, because I'm intrigued by one of the exit polls. We were discussing, Barry White was saying the other morning when he was in that he had seen people doing an exit poll, but that no poll had been, because normally the way an exit poll happens is first thing you hear, here's the tally of who's yes or no, and it tells you what's happening. In actual fact, this was the, we assume, the Sunday Indo doing their exit poll, which collected from people their explanation in just raw words of why they voted the way that they voted. They then fed that into ChatGPT using AI, I think for the first time in Ireland, and distilled it into qualitative analysis of why people voted the way they did. It's interesting to see AI coming to bear on political analysis in referendums in Ireland, isn't it?
It is, and it could have me out of a job soon enough, Anton. But one of the things I was struck though reading the analysis was, so here on page 4, I think, of the Sunday Indo, a lack of clarity and information, and then it says, many respondents. Now, in old polling, we would say 38% of respondents. And again here, lack of very vague or poor wording and lack of clarity. Many said the term strive did not commit the government to concrete action. Now, there are tables which shows exit poll preference per parties and per gender and age group, all of which are very grim reading for the yes side. But yeah, I mean, we worry about ChatGPT in universities, students putting in, and you know, a farm essay is produced. We've got the hang of spotting these. But it's very interesting, certainly, that it's becoming more pervasive in our lives.
Sunday Independent leading the way in ChatGPT.
You mentioned the people saying that they lacked faith in the word strive. We just got a text to say, I will strive to vote for this government next time round, but they shouldn't hold their breath.
And Anton, a thing that had just kind of threw me a little bit when I was reading the article in the Sunday Independent today about the way the government chose to actually not to take on board the Citizens Assembly recommendations. Yeah. Is that a bit, not a big thing?
I think that's a very key point and a very interesting one. It's a lot of future implications, because if you have a Citizens Assembly, and if we're to believe in the process, and it's a very credible process in Ireland and being copied elsewhere, if they make recommendations and then there isn't seen as a kind of a congruence between the recommendations of the Citizens Assembly and what a government come up with, and also that committee in the Dáil on it, then that you're right, Anne-Marie. I think that becomes a problem then. It's also a problem if you're going to say in the future, we're going to ask the Citizens' Assembly to look at disability.
Yeah.
Well, people are going to say, well, are you going to take on board what they have to say? Now, it's never exactly the same as the Citizens' Assembly, because it is different when you actually have to get down to the wording.
But
you should feel a comfort between the two, which clearly wasn't felt this time.
Interesting text relating to what you said earlier on, Francis, about the individual stories. As the mother of an adult son with profound intellectual disabilities, I can't even put into words how insulting this referendum was to us. They were prepared to throw us to the wolves. The family will care and the government will take a back seat, is basically what they were saying. I gave up a good job over a decade ago because I had no other option and I had to stay home to care for my son. I get €100 per week from the government. Does that sound like prioritising carers? Absolutely no. We will be returning to this after 11 o'clock because Michael McDougall is going to be with us. He's so significant on the no side. We're also going to be joined by Lisa Chambers from Fianna Fáil to analyse, to get their take on where it went wrong from Lisa Chambers' perspective, right from Michael McDougall's perspective. There is other news of the weekend, notably Michael O'Leary with sort of glasses up on top of the head and gurning with frustration at the fact that he has to deal with Eamon Ryan. We will get into where his frustrations are taking him after this break. Front page of the Business Post has Michael O'Leary scratching his head and on glasses and just a picture of frustration with the system. Francis Fitzgerald, as a cabinet minister, does having Michael O'Leary roar and calling his quotes, parent minister, a dunce, does that help his case?
Well, it's Michael O'Leary. I mean, when you read this article, he says, and I'm amused by this, there was no meeting of minds during his face-to-face with Ryan. I don't think anybody expected it. And then it's also, it was clearly evident from his demeanour that the Ryanair boss was still wound up following the high-profile meeting with Ryan. I mean, when is he not wound up? I mean, I'm still grateful to him, having lived in London in the 80s and the price of airfares then, for what he has done for air travel and the access he's given to Irish people. But certainly no meeting of minds with Eamon Ryan.
But from a government perspective, does this work? I mean, oddly, if you go all the way back, do you remember Michael O'Leary and she was in the bath about Mary O'Rourke a million years ago?
He got a lot of criticism for that.
Yes. But it has been the Ryanair technique. Is it effective, or is there a subtler way to go about this?
Well, it's his style, I have to say. I mean, a lot of people didn't like it when he kind of verged into a bit more criticism of him and felt more personal. But I think from the point of view of him highlighting, you know, his point about the cap and the implications of it, I think he does an excellent job. From the point of view of the minister, does it make Eamon Ryan change his mind, that kind of approach? Not really. But it certainly gets the issue out there, and I think it means cabinet will discuss it more.
Well, beneath the picture of the multiple pictures, there are three different versions of he has layers of gurning, has Michael O'Leary. But beneath that picture on the front of the Business Post is the headline: Shannon Water Pipeline Delays, a Threat to Foreign Investment. A bit like Mary O'Rourke in the bath, this harkens back several decades. Anne-Marie McHugh, we have been hearing about this since the 90s. This is when it was originally floated that we would take water from the Shannon for Dublin.
Crazy. And believe it or not, when I was driving up this morning, I was actually listening to the issues in the Algarve with water at the moment. And they're looking at the option of putting in the, you know, the the system where you can actually cleanse the seawater.
Desalination.
The desalination, and there's uproar about that. But, you know, while we were reading that article, I was just trying to kind of find just something to catch on to in the article, and I wasn't finding it. So I said, I'll give a text there to my neighbour in Laois, the president of the IFA, and say, what's going on in relation to farmers and all of this? And I got a few very interesting things. 500 farms are involved in this project. And the
So let me be clear. So this is, just so everybody knows, this is the pipeline to take water from the Shannon to Dublin, because we were told we need it desperately for the capital city and we need it for foreign direct investment. And what you're bringing us now is the president of the IFA's view.
President of IFA, because it's all saying about it needs to move forward or foreign investment won't happen, and Irish Water are saying this, that and the other. But the reality on the ground is there's 500 farms involved. It's 170 kilometres involved. And the main factors for the farmers are their loss of income and the loss of value of their homesteads, okay? And at this point, there's only initial conversations have been had with these farmers. And they're saying now we have to make this move on quickly. You can't, it's been mentioned somewhere else, you know, ride roughshod over people. You just can't do that with people's livelihoods. Get down there and get talking to these people if it must have moved on by 2032. You can't move it on without these people.
It can't be news to them, though. It has been knocking around for several decades.
It's not
decades.
News to them, but they're not being talked about in detail and in depth, say, where can this go and what can we do about it? Farming is not it's not a well-off livelihood in any way, and especially not in these areas, because they tend to flood a lot very regularly. So, you know, if they're going to have a loss of income about this, they need to know the facts and they need to see what alternatives have
we
got.
It comes across from the article as a sort of stalemate, really, that there is enough water to meet demands for multinationals up to 2030, but only if a major project to deliver water in the capital is delivered within 8 years. Then you have other people saying that if you dealt with the leaks that are, you know, and you replace the pipes in Dublin, that would be better use of resources. So it doesn't even seem like there's a commitment to go ahead with
no.
it. And it's more a description of the current situation in this article, I think,
The problem with delivering something in 8 years is, like, I mean, the record isn't great on other significant infrastructural projects. We won't go near the National Children's Hospital, but it's still not open. Metro North, good luck with that. What is it, 2040?
Right. And some of the things that are in this that are easy to say, like fix the leaks, do involve things like lifting up George and Dublin and finding out what's under it, which is
so
tricky.
I mean, and you mentioned the three pictures of Michael O'Leary, but there's another six on page five.
It's true,
and
tomorrow.
And the interview struck me, though, as interesting, is that the minister went to, he went away from home. He went to the opponent. It was out in Ryanair's office in Swords, which I thought was interesting in and of itself, that the minister would move from government buildings. I don't know, did he take public transport or not, but out he went and faced Michael O'Leary. Now, it's interesting, the headline talks about the Ryanair boss doesn't hold back on his, quote, favourite Green minister's agenda. So I'm not sure what his least meant, what the favourable ratings are like. But there's nothing really surprising. I mean, the Ryanair, their bottom line is profit. And I agree with Francis. I did a little experiment with my students during the week and said, find me a flight to London to go tonight. And they were able to get one, you know, now it was like 5 to midnight or something, but like for 30 quid or something. And he has transformed, revolutionised, one might say, air travel. But they're, and I think he can't wait for the next general election, to put it frankly. And I don't think he'll be voting green somehow.
And I still think it's good that they met face to face and sat down. You never lose when you do that, in my view. I think it's good.
Text saying, as usual, O'Leary is right on the money. Standing still is not an option. If Dublin Airport isn't allowed to expand, the business will contract and we will lose our vital connectivity. Other stuff, by the way, text saying, happy Mother's Day to all the lovely mammies and grandmothers in Ireland. A fine point. I forgot that it is, of course, World Mother's National, I can't remember. Mother's Day will do grand, exactly. Was anybody watching the rugby yesterday?
Yeah, running between the rugby, the Formula One and the coverage and the referendum. There was a lot on at the same time.
The rugby was traumatic, wasn't it?
It
was traumatic.
So close.
But it just goes to show how far we've come. I mean, we were devastated when Ireland lost to New Zealand agonisingly in the World Cup. I mean, we remember when Ireland used to lose by 50 points to New Zealand. this is.
Do you remember the desperate hope that Simon Gagan might eventually get a ball and we'd all be all right?
And like we're like on the verge of having two Grand Slams in a row, which has never been done. You lose by a point with a drop goal. Now, I think there was a penalty which would have given England a win anyway. But to see an Irish team play with such a verve, and now they were under pressure from the off. I mean, we have come a long way in international rugby from the grim 80s.
Can somebody explain to me where that English team came from?
That's the big question in the newspapers.
Like where were they last week?
Apparently, I mean, they always show up when they're playing Ireland.
Did
that's
they
just a comment was made to me that they always show up.
I did hear someone saying like they have a whole group of new younger people coming through, and it's really kind of beginning to prove.
Well, rugby is a game in many ways of physicality.
How good they are.
And they certainly shouldered up yesterday. You're playing at home. You've been written off as like the worst English team in generations.
This is it, yeah.
I mean, Ireland in the past have had the odds. Unbelievable performance when we've been underdogs, and I don't think anyone would going yesterday or watching would have been surprised that England played better than they had played in the championship. But the fact that they played so well, and yet Ireland without playing at their best were, you know, agonisingly close. I mean, if we could have just held on in the last minute or two
so
when we had the ball
the
and
end.
Kicking it away, we might be talking about a different result today.
In a while, we are going to be talking to Henry McKean, who is taking a bullet for the rest of us by flying out to LA and standing on the red carpet and seeing all the glitzy celebs. But the reason he's out there, of course, it is the Oscars. But most importantly, it is the Oscars with some Irish skin in the game, because Cillian Murphy is up for Best Actor for Oppenheimer. Anna-Marie, if you were betting, I should say, by the way, Anna-Marie McHugh from Ploughing Championships, Francis Fitzgerald, FG MEP for Dublin, and Gary Murphy, Professor of Politics at DCU, is the panel this morning. If you were a betting woman, would you be putting the money on Cillian?
I think so. You know, it just seems to be across the board. He's the most popular for the win. But also I want to mention Robbie Ryan in the cinematography, Ed Gein and Andrew Lowe in the best picture. Isn't it great the whole business in Ireland?
Brilliant.
We're up there on the red carpet. And, you know, we're such a tiny country. Brilliant, delighted for them, and hopefully he'll make it tonight.
A win on this would be very good for the country's morale, I think, for the government's morale in particular.
Can I crawl up onto the high moral ground on an aspect of this and see if I am alone on it? An awful lot of the coverage has talked about Cillian Murphy being the first Irish-born winner of an Oscar. Daniel Day-Lewis is an Irish citizen, and he has more Oscars for Best Actor than anybody else on the planet. Since when did we develop two-tier citizenship for ones who are natural-born and ones who only had the father born here and took the citizenship?
There was a referendum. There was a referendum. To go back to our talk, Anton, as far
back to referendum,
with which Michael McDougall, of course, was involved in his days as when he was Attorney General and then later Minister for Justice. But I agree, and particularly in the sort of multicultural Ireland we live in today, it seems a bit odd, to put it bluntly. I mean, if they just said it would be the first Cork person, I mean, that would be, I think.
Well, I don't know if you read yesterday, but Matt Cooper in the Daily Mail was writing his usual column, and at the end of it, he had a piece in respect of Cillian Murphy and said, look, let's be absolutely clear. The only thing that matters is that he's from Cork, and it needs to be writ large in everything.
I would endorse that.
There's also a funny piece about Barbie, and they say Barbie made 1 billion, but Ken is to star at the Oscars. Tut, tut.
We will be talking to Michael McDougall in a couple of minutes after the 11 o'clock news about his views on what went right for the no side, and also what the political implications may be for him personally, because a lot of people are now saying, God, this wouldn't be a bad old springboard for a general election campaign.
So our president, although he said he wasn't measuring up the curtains in the Oris, but I mean, there's a presidential election looming in 18 months. But
interesting you bring this up, Gary.
I think Francis is lining up for that.
Well, I see a lot of coverage of Francis Fitzgerald being mentioned in this capacity. Has she a shot, do you think?
I think Frances Fitzgerald would be the most formidable Fine Gael candidate, but Fine Gael, of course, have a woeful record in presidential elections. Gay Mitchell got 6% in 2011, and I think Frances would be an excellent candidate.
No, thank you, Gary. There's
now, this has been asked of you before when it was just a vague possibility. Your name is getting more and more associated with it. Are you considering a run?
No, you know, paper doesn't refuse. There's a long way to go before the presidential elections. And as you know, Anton, context is everything. So let's see where we're at.
That's not a no.
It's very much not a no. It's not even a maybe.
Keep an open mind.
Frances Fitzgerald, Fine Gael MEP for Dublin, and I should say retiring Fine Gael MEP for Dublin. She's stepping down from the European Parliament. Gary Murphy, Professor of Politics at DCU, writing in the Sunday Times this weekend. And Anna-Marie McHugh, Assistant Managing Director of the National Ploughing Association. Thank you all very much. Text to say, and this will be grist to Gary's mill, he will be the first Cork-born Oscar winner. Yes, we got that point. We get that Cillian Murphy is from Cork.
The Anton Savage Show.
Brought to you by PwC.
Sunday mornings from 10. On News Talk.